This is the Future of HR Podcast, episode 153.
The first piece is kind of unfair. Build trust early. So if you're just walking in, it might be a little late. So my advice is for a CHRO that's just entering the job, whether or not you think there's a succession on the horizon, you need to plan as though there were, because you can't influence the succession process if you're not trusted. That was something that we clearly learned from this study. That's something you need to be thinking about before we get into the succession. Staying objective. So I think there's going to be a lot of pressure to lean into the CEO's favorite or maybe sugarcoat some top truths or feedback when people are asking you for it. But your role as a CHRO is really to bring that clarity, help the board see the full picture. Not that you are challenging the CEO's view, but in many cases, this is what we heard from directors, that they may feel that the CHRO is actually a more objective viewpoint than the outgoing CEO. The outgoing CEO has somebody in mind. That's what they often think. So that ability to stay objective, and then just tying it back to strategy always. So anchoring the process in our future direction, our strategic vision. Let's make sure everything that we do connects back to that. If it doesn't connect back to that, why are we doing it?
How does trust affect the CEO succession process? Why are CHROs often more critical than CEOs in shaping succession outcomes? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR Podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career, to the next level. Since launching the Future of HR podcast in late 2022, I've been fortunate to have meaningful conversations with over 150 HR thought leaders and world-class CHROs from around the globe. These conversations have given me a unique perspective on where HR is today and where we're heading in the future. And because of this vantage point, over the past year, I have had the privilege and opportunity to be a keynote speaker at 16 internal HR conferences for Fortune 500 companies like Kohler, AbbVie, Corning, Nike, LabCorp, and more. And what am I talking about? More often than not, I'm asked to give my signature talk, Future-Proofing HR, Creating Value by Unlocking the Capabilities of Tomorrow, which is designed to help your HR team shift their mindset from being a strategic business partner to a value creator. And these aren't just presentations, they're interactive sessions that equip your HR leaders with practical frameworks to challenge conventional thinking and move beyond the traditional HR playbook. If you're planning your next HR conference, career week, or leadership gathering and want to provide your team with insights that drive immediate impact, I'd love to connect and explore how I might help make your event a big success. Feel free to reach out to me at jp@futureofhr.com to start the conversation. And with that, my guest this week is Ani Wong and Anthony Nyberg. Ani's the president and CEO of the Center for Executive Compensation and the senior executive vice president of the HR Policy Association. If you've not heard of HRPA, it is the leading public policy organization of CHROs, representing the largest employers doing business in the United States and globally. Anthony is the director of Center for Executive Succession at the Darla Moore School of Business at the University of South Carolina. The center provides a forum for corporate leaders to shape the future direction of succession practices, and they have the opportunity to contribute to cutting-edge research related to C-suite succession planning. Ani and Anthony's latest joint report from the Center for Executive Succession and the HR Policy Association explores 10 common pitfalls in CEO succession and how trusted CHROs can help resolve them. And as an HR leader, you know that CEO succession is pivotal. And this research confirms what we already know, that the board ultimately owns CEO succession. But it also uncovers many new insights into the critical role that CHROs play in shaping a strong, future-ready, successful CEO succession process. I encourage you to read the full report, and I've included it in my show notes, and you can find it on futureofhr.com. This was an insightful conversation with Ani and Anthony as we discussed What first-time CHROs must know about CEO succession? Why trust between a CHRO, the board, and the CEO is critical for a successful succession process? How to give boards real exposure to top internal talent? How CHROs can help boards to assess internal and external talent objectively? And why CEO role profiles used for succession should be forward-looking and should evolve with strategy changes. I'd love to hear your thoughts in this episode as you listen, so drop me a line on LinkedIn and say hello. And now let's jump into my conversation with Ani and Anthony. Ani and Anthony, how are you both doing?
We are great. Thank you so much for having us.
Yes, thank you, JP. It's fabulous to be back on your show.
I know, Anthony. Well, we had to bring you back because last time you showed that you were a very capable co-host. This is like your second audition to help really maybe co-host the future of HR at some point.
Yeah, well, I think I carried Kevin, I'm sure. So that's how that worked.
That's true. And I will definitely make sure you definitely need to check out episode 100 with Kevin Cox and Anthony on CEO succession. It was good. This is sort of round two, but now we brought Ani back and you guys have really done a lot of great research on CEO succession and specifically the 10 pitfalls boards must avoid. So Anthony, let's start with you. Let's talk big picture. You did survey dozens of board of directors and you found that in CEO succession, this surprised me a little bit, CHROs are often more critical than the CEO in shaping the actual outcome. That's a bold finding. Tell us what led to that conclusion.
It was really the directors talking about the importance of the CHRO in this process. And to really highlight, the directors share with us that when they have a great CHRO, a leader, Kevin Cox out there that I just tried to tease, that that person really makes all of the difference in terms of driving a great succession process. And those directors are really talking about helping define the process, helping really shape the criteria that will be useful for the incoming or the next CEO, and really helping objectively evaluate those candidates.
It makes sense that the CHRO can play such a big role. But you also, Ani, you found that this really only works if the CHRO is actually trusted. What's that look like?
That was a super fascinating finding in this research. There were definitely two tracks of director feedback. If the CHRO is a trusted CHRO with both the board and the CEO, then the directors responded that an engaged CHRO is incredibly important to the process and that on the boards where they felt like they had the best succession processes in place, they always had an engaged CHRO. But if there wasn't a pre-existing relationship of trust with the CHRO for whatever reason, maybe they're new, maybe there were issues that had happened in the past, then it was the opposite. The same behaviors that we recommended in our guide could actually backfire on a CHRO. They were perceived totally differently by the board. So instead of the CHRO being engaged and trying to broaden the board's perspective, which is how they felt with a trusted CHRO, they might actually feel that the CHRO has an agenda that they're trying to put forward if they lack that trust. So the very same actions could be perceived totally differently by the board. I wasn't expecting that.
Just to keep building on that, because these first two things you raised are really closely linked, right? It's the directors. The reason why the CHRO is considered so valuable is that the directors are really looking for that objective information and a way to really trust the process that's going on. And there can be times when the CEO may have their own agendas, whether that's just about the current management of the organization, or they want to stay in place, or they're not putting in enough time in terms of those potential new CEOs or the future CEOs. And the board needs someone that's going to help drive that process and that they can rely on to be an objective source of knowledge, which is where the CHRO's role of coming in terms of helping develop talent and drive the process. And of course, exactly as Ani just said, that requires a great deal of trust between the CHRO and the board. And to help in many of these processes, the trust between that CHRO and the CEO.
Yeah, trust obviously is really critical. I'm wondering though, as you talk with the board, did you hear, regardless if they had trust or not, that the boards were expecting CHROs to play a very consistent role? Or did you see some board members have different views of how engaged a CHRO should be in this process?
I would say first that we see a very big difference across organizational quality and size of the organization. Larger organizations that understand, and particularly those directors that have seen great CHROs, understand that those CHROs can be invaluable, really part of the most important group in the organization around CEO succession, but it's really all about driving the organization going forward. Smaller organizations or directors that have not encountered a great CHRO often don't have that same perspective.
That's really interesting to hear that. And it goes back to the trust a little bit. I want to circle back on that because I think that so maturity of the organization, maybe the experience of the board members, maybe some of the past history can obviously give them a different view of this. But I think on this point, if you're not trusted and you push too hard doing what good CHROs should do, it can backfire because people's intent may be misinterpreted. Anything advice you'd have for CHROs coming in who are in that situation? How do you tread lightly but still make an impact?
I do think that the trust has to be earned. The most difficult situation would be a brand new CHRO who has to immediately do an emergent CEO succession. That's going to be the trickiest situation that you could be in because you earn trust over time by being objective, by showing discretion, having conversations with people and not sharing what you heard, or also having conversations, but and maybe not sharing what you heard, but sharing that you had the conversation. So just as an example, the lead director asks to have a call with you. As a CHRO, if you have a good relationship with your CEO, you're going to say, the lead director wants to have a conversation with me. And, you know, here's kind of what I'm going to say or what we're going to talk about. Not sharing details that the lead director shared with you that are confidential, but also not icing the CEO out that you even had the call. But that happens over time. I think that with succession planning, you've got this topic that naturally stirs up tension. It's touching on issues of power and legacy and uncertainty. So the CHRO can actually help to diffuse that by positioning it as a business critical process and not as a exit sign for the CEO. So starting the process earlier can help build trust because that way you can say, look, we're not pushing the existing CEO out the door. We clearly, he or she's not going anywhere for the next couple of years, but let's talk about the process. That way it's not perceived by anybody as kind of like having an agenda. But as I said, if you're a brand new CHRO coming in with an emergent CEO succession, you may not be able to play the same role that a trusted CHRO can play. That's just the fact of it.
Yeah, that is really helpful to think through. And to your point on this, different types of successions, you've got like emergent, like you said, hey, there's an emergency. We now are making a big decision. And then there's more of the planful side, hopefully, right? The more intentional, like we were really thinking about this 2 to 3 years out. But you always have that luxury. And I think the point you're underlining is that, and we hope, I think most CHROs know this, but your job is not to replace the CEO. The board should be thinking about this. So the board should initiate these conversations because otherwise the CHRO is in a really awkward position as they're thinking about succession for the entire team. And so I think that point is just that nuance is interesting.
As you say, the board should initiate these conversations, but a really strong CHRO in those situations where the board is perhaps going a little more slowly about this, because you would even just mention 2 to 3 years out, we would say it should be much longer than that. And that it should really be, exactly as Ani said, part of that ongoing process, which is the best business practice. If that's not happening, then the CHRO, if at all possible, should be trying to help encourage that CEO to be making sure that process is ongoing, which includes just talent development, which we would all say is best practice across the organization anyway, and that the directors are thinking about this not as pushing a CEO in any direction, but really just about trying to make sure that the firm is in the best position possible for its long-term success.
Actually, Anthony, to that point about how you asked JP about how to establish trust, I think that another way that takes time to show that you really understand the business, and therefore you are reframing succession as part of the leadership process to say, this is what I think is going to be critical to our business in the future. We might talk about this a little bit more in the podcast about how you future-proof your CEO profile. But I think the more that the board and the CEO feel like you as the CHRO really do understand the business now and in the future, then there's less of a personal aspect to it. So there's less maybe place for somebody to misunderstand and think you have an agenda, but, or you're pushing like a specific person for like almost personal or political reasons, which can sometimes come up. especially if you lack that trust.
Seems like almost every CHRO you have on your podcast says that part, that you have the CHRO to be effective has to be thinking about the business first, has to be that strategic partner, and CEO succession is exactly the same in that way.
Yeah, no, I think it makes a lot of sense. That is huge to underline this, that this is a business process and really about creating the future and success of the organization. But you guys did identify 10 major pitfalls, which it's a fascinating report. I definitely highlight and why I want to read that. But of the 10, I'm just kind of curious, start with you, Ani, which of the 10 really kind of surprised you the most?
I love that question. So I was most surprised by pitfall 8, when candidate development disrupts business. Boards are always talking about how they want to develop internal talent. I was a little surprised at how hesitant they actually are in practice to move top performers out of stable roles. I was also a little surprised by how their response of how quickly that kind of caution can backfire. Basically, we give lip service to the idea that we need internal development, but then there's like this reluctance to actually do anything that could even unintentionally destabilize the business. And that's actually preventing leadership readiness. So that surprised me a little. A great CHRO is invaluable in this very area because they're able to structure the right experiences. They're able to manage performance expectations. They're able to figure out what are the experiences that candidates need to be CEO ready. So I think it's actually a critical area for it's right up their alley as a talent architect.
Yeah, Anthony?
A combination of a couple of the earlier ones that we found, which involved the CEO hesitating or the board being a little reactive, those surprised me not so much in the fact that boards, very much like the conversation we were just having, can sometimes be slow to getting the succession conversation going, right? There's a lot of reasons for it. You talk to board members who will say, you know, our CEO is still young, our CEO just was put in place, or business is going great. We don't want to do anything that disrupts it. So it makes sense. But what was surprising to me was that many of the directors we spoke to would say, if you say, when is the right day to start CEO succession planning? The cliche, and many of them would say it, is you should start CEO succession planning the day the next CEO takes office, because it should be an ongoing, continuous process. So then the surprising part to me was that though there was tremendous agreement about that, that it should be ongoing all the time, when we asked boards what their process was at the moment, or board members, many of them would say, well, we're not doing it right now because of all of these things that we just laid out. So the surprising part was that even when directors know what's best practice, often they're not actually engaging in it.
The board CEO succession knowing doing gap, I think you've uncovered there. On that one. That's interesting. It's really interesting. And it makes sense. Like, we know we should do that thing, but it's actually a lot of work, right? This does require some effort, some leadership from the board and a CHRO and team to help develop those folks.
To be fair, while we are doing these interviews, we didn't push very hard on showing that gap, as you described, right? Being much more polite about it. But there are a lot of legitimate reasons for why that wouldn't capture a board's attention, right? The world is a little crazy right now. A lot of other things might take precedence, or you would think so in the short term, at least. There are, of course, all the things we talked about that many board members are reluctant to press a CEO that may have other agenda items or things that are going on. Board members may not want to scare a CEO or do anything that seems like it might be a challenge. But we know best practice is to make this a sustained part of the practice and keep it ongoing.
Yeah, that's really good. So Anthony, one of the key findings is that boards often create CEO profiles based on the past success rather than future needs like we're talking about here. How can CHROs help the board think differently about what they might need in a CEO over the next 3 to 5 years?
It's an interesting challenge that we all have, because as humans, we are constantly prone to looking back on what went poorly or what is going well, and then trying to either replicate or do the opposite. And the challenge for companies, particularly in this day and age where there's so much change going on, is that we really need to be thinking about what is going to be in our best interest, who are going to be the best leaders, what are going to be the appropriate attributes, skills, etc., for the next challenges that come up, and not living in the past. CHROs can really help directors think about that by being much more focused, as Ani had said earlier, on what is going to drive business success. And let's focus on that. And then simultaneously helping directors who are often, particularly when there's a great CEO, enamored with the abilities and capabilities of that current CEO. And the CHRO can help those board members remember what that CEO is like when they started, so that board members are not trying to compare candidates to a fully polished, perfect version of the current CEO, but recognizing that this CEO really developed over time also.
Yeah, really good insights to be future focused around this and really think about where the organization's going and what they really need from that leadership role. That makes a lot of sense. Ani, we talked about this idea of this CEO profile. How often should companies be revisiting this? How often should boards be revisiting the CEO profile?
Yeah, it should not be something the board dusts off every few years. And I think it should be really tightly aligned with strategy. So to me, that means every time the strategy evolves, the CEO profile has to evolve with it. You're entering a new market, you're undergoing a digital transformation, whatever the case, then the capabilities are shifting. And if you don't do that, then there's a real risk that you hire a CEO that can solve the problems you had yesterday rather than tomorrow. So I think that's where the CHRO, again, I mean, this is right in their talent set of being able to construct future-ready profiles. We sometimes hear, well, I have no idea what the skills are going to be of the future. And that is probably true. It's probably never been truer than it is right now. So CHROs, and often like you'll hear third-party C-suite assessment experts say, we're testing for flexibility, we're testing for agility, we're testing for humility, right? Like being able to learn, curiosity, things like that. So almost more behavioral aspects of the profile. But I think it needs to be reviewed every year.
Makes sense. I mean, you got the who the CEO is and the kind of leader they are. And so how they show up and what they do. But then you have the industry piece, where the industry's going. And then now with AI, how many AI CEOs are there? Not very many because it's so new, but yet every company probably has AI in their docket of transformation. So I think all that has to come into play of where that organization is going, which really does ground as a business conversation. So it's really interesting. Anthony?
We just might remind people also that the leader of that organization, they're responsible for that full transformation. So as you raise AI, and then how many leaders have great AI experience? That's probably not the experience that we need our leaders to have. There are going to be people there that are implementing the really critical AI transitions, et cetera. And we've talked before about those people really leading those changes probably need to be CHROs, not letting that outsource to another place. But that the really great leaders have to be those that are capable of creating the trust throughout the organization, such that change can actually be implemented and bought into by everyone in the organization. And those leaders need to be those that can set the right vision and help get everyone enthusiastic about taking on those challenges, as Ani had said, that we've probably never really seen before or will feel very different. Another way of saying that is we need leaders that can help remove the fear from everyone in the organization so that they're free to take on these really interesting challenges that are coming up. That's something that's a little different than maybe prior generations, where I think an olden days model was that leaders should instill fear. Some of these things we can really be looking at that are probably a little more ubiquitous and not just isolated to a specific industry or time.
Yeah. And if you can make the case that you should be revisiting the CEO profile more often every year or much even sooner than that, this is the time, right? There's more transformation happening across industries and just everywhere at all at once. So it's a tough time to be a CEO, frankly. High expectations to drive that kind of change and get that kind of buy-in you're talking about, Anthony.
And we can be thinking in terms, I mean, the CEO timeline, right? The amount of time that that CEOs are in place is shrinking all the time now. So we don't have to be thinking about what's going to happen 10 or 20 years down the road. Just what do we need for the next 4 or 5 or 6 years?
Absolutely. Well, thinking about timeline down the road, it takes time to develop talent. And one of the insights that I thought was, I guess, not as surprising because I've seen this, but I thought it's a really important one to bring up, is that the boards often have limited insight into their own company's internal talent pipeline. So we're going a little bit beyond CEO succession here because it might be the C-suite succession. But How do you recommend CHROs give board members meaningful exposure to high potential leaders? What's that look like? And did you talk about that? Ani, maybe start with you first.
Boards can't bet on internal talent if they never meet them. So I think that the main thing is the exposure far past kind of polished presentation decks or like a scripted board meeting where they kind of file in and do their piece right under the watchful eye of the CEO. I think CHROs are really changing that dynamic, building touch points and opportunities for the board to engage with high potential talent in much more meaningful ways. So bringing emerging leaders into strategy sessions, offsites. We talked to a CHRO who said they really tried to make sure, especially if they had a global leader that the board didn't have a lot of access to, but who they thought might be a potential candidate for CEO one day, making sure the board saw that leader in their own habitat, so to speak, go to the country where they operate right now and watch them in their environment and see how different they are than when you're kind of bringing them to a board meeting and saying, you have to give a deck to the presentation to the board and you're going to be judged on that. So I thought that was a really cool suggestion. A lot of directors said, I would like to see these people not together with the CEO. I want to go out to dinner with them, or I want to go take a tour, a site visit, or look at their factory, or just watch them in their environment without the CEO kind of looking over their shoulder. So those are all kind of ways the CHRO can make that happen. But this concept of a skip level candidate is more and more interesting to boards. Back to the conversation we just had about future ready. It may be that the next CEO is not currently a direct report to the CEO.
Anthony, thoughts on this?
Just to build on what Ani was saying, one of the things that we came out that maybe it was surprising to me also was that board members seem to be a little more risk-seeking about potential candidates than often the current C-suite might be, because boards are recognizing that they need to see people that are going to thrive for years to come. And so in those scenarios that Ani was describing about getting board members out in the field globally, whatever it might be, the board members shared that they would like to see people more raw, whereas CEOs, of course, are more interested in making sure that they're presenting a really unified, well-polished candidate out there because how they may think that that makes them look.
Yeah, really interesting insights, great suggestions, I think, to help board members get a little closer to that talent, understand the real leaders that they're potentially going to invest in, right? And I think that makes a lot of sense. People want to have their own assessment, not just coming from an executive search firm or another assessment firm. On the flip side of that was interesting. So while maybe boards don't have as much visibility to the internal talent or want more, you also found that boards sometimes have a superficial assessment of external candidates. And how can CHROs help get a more objective understanding of that outside talent without looking like they're pushing, to Ani's point originally around, hey, I'm pushing external talent, but really just trying to open the aperture so people can see what's out there in the marketplace and make a good comparison for the organization. Anthony?
First, would say that it was pretty universally agreed that internal succession is the better outcome, if at all possible, right? There's some extreme situations where you might want radical change and someone from the outside. But by and large, we know that the internal successors are going to have a better chance of success, in part just because they already know the culture, the internal dynamics, et cetera. So the goal is certainly to try to create optionality for the board members and preferably within. But for the board's sake and for that future CEO, everyone would like to know that this is the best possible person for the role in the whole world, not just the best person from internal or the best person from the pool within the organization. So there is value in thinking about what would the external marketplace look like. And CHROs can be constantly keeping track of who would be potential candidates in the industry and how do our people compare to that one. This is, of course, a great place to bring in external firms, consulting firms, et cetera, that have access to and are looking at other candidates. So it's not about necessarily getting someone from the outside. It's much more about just making sure that you've fairly evaluated the talent and are selecting the best person.
I think it's really interesting, this question of who should be doing assessments. People disagree on like what's the best way to do assessments. So objective understanding of outside talent is probably going to be a search firm of some kind. But then there's assessing your own internal talent. Are you going to have the same search firm do that. There's now these boutiques, you know, that come up. JB, you're shaking your head, you know. Yeah, so that I think a lot of companies are looking toward that, having a completely separate resource that's doing the assessments of your own internal C-suite.
Yeah, I think the executive recruiting industry, and there's a lot of great executive recruiters, are awesome at finding that talent. But assessing the internal talent, to me, it's a little bit like having the guy who sold you the car take a look at your engine and tell you if you need an oil change. There's a little bit of a conflict of interest sometimes. So I think having a separate firm that does that assessment piece and works with the board is important, but also they need to understand the company, the culture. There's many different ways to do it. I think the main piece you're getting at, because again, it's always going to come down to a board decision, is how do you get the much objective information they need? How does the board feel confident and comfortable with the decision they're going to make? We started the conversation a little bit around, if you are a CHRO, what it might look like if you are going through this process. And so I'm curious, if you guys were coaching a CHRO who's walking into their first major CEO succession planning process, what are the three pieces of advice you would give? And Ani, let's start with you.
The first piece, this is kind of unfair, build trust early. So if you're just walking in, it might be a little late. So my advice is, for a CHRO that's just entering the job, whether or not you think there's a succession on the horizon, you need to plan as though there were, because you can't influence the succession process if you're not trusted. That was something that we clearly learned from this study. That's something you need to be thinking about before we get into the succession. Staying objective. So I think there's going to be a lot of pressure to lean into the CEO's favorite, or maybe sugarcoat some top truths or feedback when people are asking you for it. But your role as a CHRO is really to bring that clarity, help the board see the full picture. Not that you are challenging the CEO's view, but in many cases, this is what we heard from directors, that they may feel that the CHRO is actually a more objective viewpoint than the outgoing CEO. The outgoing CEO has somebody in mind. That's what they often think. So that ability to stay objective, and then just tying it back to strategy always. So anchoring the process in our future direction, our strategic vision. Let's make sure everything that we do connects back to that. If it doesn't connect back to that, why are we doing it? If this element of the profile doesn't connect back to what we think our strategy is going to be, why is it in there? So I think that continual tying it back to the business strategy is an advice that I would give to a CHRO.
Great. Anthony, what would you add?
Well, the good news is there's a lot of overlap with our what we think are the three most important things, which is just a reflection, I think, of all the conversations that we had with directors. And one thing we didn't mention, by the way, JP, is that in addition to talking to these directors, we spent a lot of time talking to external consulting firms and et cetera, but also really interestingly with external investors who were sharing with us, you know, these are some of the largest investors in the world, sharing with us how important this topic is to them. But that said, my three, similarly to Ani, of course, that it starts with trust, and it's trust with the CEO and the directors, and also the other potential internal talent. So people have to really believe that you are working in the best interest of the organization, not in the person that might be best to you if they become CEO or anything along those lines. The second one is remembering that this really should be a long-term process. So we talked about that in a number of ways. But as one example, if we think about, if we believe as we're helping the board come up with the right profile for that next CEO, and that profile suggests that people need, call it international experience and running a P&L and something else, each of those positions might require 2 to 3 years in role to fully get the experiences that are necessary both to be evaluated and to develop well. And if that's the case, and you have potential candidates that need 2 or 3, and each takes 2 or 3 years, you're talking about a 6 to 9 year process to get people in place. So this needs to be going on very early in terms of making sure that you have the right talent in the right place. And then the third one would be very similarly to what Ani said, but and that's involved in remaining objective and simultaneously remembering that this is the director's decision. It is not the current CEO's decision. It's definitely not the current CHRO's decision. And so it is all about that CHRO making sure that they are helping the board get the information that the board needs to make a quality decision, and making sure that that information is truly objective and that the CHRO is presenting in as unbiased a way as possible.
That was a great, really good overlap on that. I would add, and please push back if you guys disagree, I would think that one of the things you want to do, assuming you've built some trust, but as you come in, I would want to assess that we have a clear succession process and that the roles are clear, the touch points, how we're going to go and work together on this and what that looks like. So you've got some alignment going in and get permission, hopefully, to make the changes you need to make or have the conversations you need to make. Would you guys agree with that, or was that inherent in your answers?
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Anthony, it's such a sobering point that you made about if anybody takes anything away from this call, it's this issue of if you're a CHRO just going into a succession, it's kind of late. You're now late. Everything we're suggesting needs to be done years earlier for the best outcome. We had an investor who asked us, well, why are there so many successions that don't work out? I really do think a lot of it is you're just starting too late. The CHRO is starting too late, and it's never going to be the CEO that's going to push that ahead. A very unusual CEO. We talked to a CEO who said, my first board meeting as a new CEO, I said, I want to talk about my succession planning. But usually that's not going to be coming from the CEO.
Yeah, that's a great insight. I mean, I think it's also some long-term planning. I think boards and the way Wall Street, a lot of companies are set up, it's short-term. And so this is a long-term kind of thought process. And if you're thinking 3 to 5, even plus longer, that's hard for people to think in the day and age. It's hard to think 3 to 5 years out, right?
The average tenure of the CHRO is like less than 5 years.
And we also know that CEO turnover is highly correlated with CHRO. So if your CEO changes, it's very likely that 50% probably will change in the next year. That whole thing makes it challenging to get the continuity, I think, to the investor's question. But the boards are supposed to play that because most board members are there for longer. So it's a little bit comes back to the boards, I think, for keeping that focus.
For sure. But this is exactly why the answer to your question about it, I mean, it is something that we certainly agree with. In fact, it's number 2 on our top 10 list of things to do. But it's why this needs to be a process and not just kind of a one-off, so that that process is in place exactly as you say, JP, for that the board is owning it. The process is in place. CHROs come and go, but the process should already be in place for the next CHRO to just keep it going.
Well, this has been a great conversation. We've learned a lot about CEO succession and the pitfalls. Ani and Anthony, I do have one more final question for you that I ask all my guests. Anthony's been through this before, so I don't know what he said last time. Hopefully he has a new answer for us.
You remember, Anthony, what you said last time?
If I had spent more time, I'd have gone to listen so I could just repeat it, because I'm sure it was great.
It was really good. But that question is, what is one word or phrase that you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years? Ani, go first so Anthony can think about his new answer.
Okay. That is very tricky. My phrase is don't wait. Whatever it is, don't wait. This is the era that we're going to be in over the next 5 to 10 years. What I had in my head when I was thinking about that was specifically AI agents. Don't wait. And on succession planning, don't wait. On engaging with policymakers, don't wait. We're entering an era where you've just got to bite the bullet. And we just had a webinar on healthcare costs, reining in healthcare costs. Don't wait to make those changes. So that would be my phrase.
Great. Anthony?
As I'm thinking back, I think that the last time I went with like multiple sentences and completely ignored your one word. So this one, I'm just going to say leadership. Here's what I've become even more convinced of in the last year. The challenges, as we spoke about a little bit earlier, for major organizations are really about, whether we think about AI or anything else, about what are we going to do with the workforce going forward? How do we help people adapt to these radical changes? How do we work through uncertainty? How do we help people be a little less afraid about trying new things? How do we do the things that Ani just said, like just go, don't wait, take on these things? And all of those issues, as I think about them, that are the most important for our organizations, come back to people-related issues. More than ever before, I think that's our CHROs that need to be these leaders. And probably more than ever before, those skill sets that the CHROs are great at least the great CHROs, who can take those and tie them into business success, those are probably the people that should be our business leaders. So more than ever in the past, I expect that we should see more CHROs becoming CEOs. Because why is it that these challenges that we have are going to be CFOs or people that have come up through technology or marketing just because it's a marketing agency? Why isn't it the people that are used to and understand dealing with these particularly big challenges that are ultimately at its core people related? Those should be the leaders of the future. So whether it's a CHR role or they become the CEO's leadership.
I love it, Anthony. So I'm going to summarize this. It's don't wait, put CHROs in leadership beyond HR. That's what I'm hearing from you, Anthony.
Yeah, I love that.
Great to be with you both. Really enjoyed the conversation, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR Podcast. Thanks again to Ani and Anthony for discussing their findings and research concerning CEO succession and the pitfalls boards must avoid. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, I think you'll enjoy my Future of HR newsletter, which is the only newsletter that's focused on helping you to elevate your career and business impact. Go to futureofhr.com now to subscribe and be sure to download my HR Leaders Blueprint, which is 18 pages of real-world advice from 100-plus HR thought leaders with simple, actionable, and proven strategies to advance your career. And with that, we'll be back next week with an amazing guest or two. You'll find out next week. Thanks again for listening and being part of our Future of HR community.